for the benefit of those with flash photography.
Yes, here we go. Guys, it's me, Colin Delaney. In un momento, I will be joined by my tag team partner, Cheech. We are the independent wrestling tag team known as To Infinity and Beyond, and you are listening to DreamWork. Each week here on DreamWork, Cheech and I break down one of the greatest tag teams in professional wrestling history and talk about what made them so great. This week, we hit the end of our four-week stint on the young, athletic, babyface tag team with the pinnacle, the guys who started it all, really the godfathers of modern tag team wrestling altogether, Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson, the Rock and Roll Express. And when we started doing this, and we decided to go down this path. We went Young Bucks, we went Hardys, we went Rockers, we went Rock and Roll. Knowing that the Rock and Roll Express was the end game, man, I've been excited for the past 4 weeks just waiting to get here. So we finally got here, and it was just as fun as I thought it was going to be. It honestly was. We didn't talk for nearly as long as I thought we would, so I can ramble on this intro. But I'm not going to. Let's just get right down into it. Whamalama, Bamalama, Rock and Roll is King, Ricky Morton, Robert Gibson, the Rock and Roll Friggin' Express! Woo, buddy.
What's up, pal?
You ready to discuss the Rock and Roll RPMs?
I mean, we could.
Big time swerve. We told everyone we're doing the Express, but we're doing the RPMs.
Oh, gosh. That would be cruel to the people.
How far do you think we're going to have to get down the list before we finally make it to a team like the Rock and Roll RPMs?
A long time.
I'll be honest with you. I've never even seen an RPMs match. I mean, I probably have, but I can't think of one off the top of my head.
I just love their name. Like, it always stood out to me. So I was always like, oh, me too. I don't know if I've ever seen a match, but if you ask me, do I like them? I like them. Why? They have a cool name.
Yeah. It had rock and roll in it. The RPMs, it's interesting. It's different. We should be to infinity and RPM.
Hey, we get a lot of revolutions per minute.
But no, yeah. So seriously, though, it's the Rock and Roll Express time.
Yeah, man. And dare I say, I'm ready to rock and roll on it.
Yeah, man. Whamalama, bamalama. And that's, I don't know about you. Did you watch a lot on the network or did you go elsewhere?
It was more so on the network, but yeah, I definitely watched some YouTube stuff that like, I knew I wouldn't be able to get on the network.
Watching it on the network is a heartbreaker because you do not get any Whamalama or Bamalama.
Yeah, no, I know. The music's always wonky. It always pisses me off.
So it always pisses me off, but with someone like the Rock and Roll Express, it especially pisses me off because I really just want to hear that song.
Yeah, and it also takes away from the pops. Like, I understand that they can still mess with it, but I was like, you know, the audio was way better if they just let it blend, let all those teenage girls go crazy.
Yeah. Well, I watched, I did some network, but I did watch most of mine on YouTube just so I can get the full rock and roll experience. We told everybody that we were doing this last week, so we talked a little bit about how we were excited, but if I can get some preliminary thoughts from you, Cheech.
Yeah, simple enough. I was just excited. You know, I mean, we did this journey, you know, that the young athletic over babyface tag team. And we knew this was the destination. You know what I mean? It was unavoidable.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And once we get into the championships and accomplishments, it's like, whoo, 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 whoo.
Yeah, that's going to be one of our biggest ones yet.
It's definitely, I feel like they're, you're going to need like tacks and string and yarn going from one to the next to kind of, it's a confusing championships and accomplishments. That's for sure. But no, I also was very excited. It's the Rock and Roll Express. They are, and I mean, there's nowhere further back you can really dial this, right?
No, I mean, like, I'm sure you could go, nah, like, I don't feel like the Briscoe brothers were, like, cool, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that was, like, the one defining thing through all these, you know, teams we've discussed is, like, they were great tags, but they were also, like, the cool, young, hip tag team. I don't know if there, I'm sure there was, but like it would be hard to find footage. Let's put it that way at least. Because you know what I mean? Like, okay, the only one I could think of would be like the Briscoe brothers. But they were more like, wow, look at these men. They're really good technicians. It wasn't like they were cool and pop culture-y.
Yeah, right. I was just trying to think like, I don't know, because all these other teams that we've done leading to this, it leads you down a path. You know, you went from the Bucks to the Hardys, to the Rockers, to the Rock and Roll. And I'm sure there's somewhere that we could possibly go for that, but I'm not sure. They're the reason we got all the way to the end. You know, without them, none of the rest of the teams seemingly, I mean, I'm sure they do exist. There's not exist in the same way, perchance.
Okay. Know? Here's where I think the evolution is. And it's a little different. They, Ricky and Robert, don't necessarily evolve from another tag team before them. They're the evolution of, they all come from wrestling families. And I know they all had, I know Robert had a brother. There was also a Ricky Gibson. I know Ricky also came from a wrestling family. I don't know if they were like the youngest of the groups, but like they all had come from wrestling families. So I feel like their evolution was, it was just in their blood. And then once they came together, plus being able to touch pop culture, they created a whole new thing. You know what I mean? So like, yes, they evolved, yeah, but not like, from like another team, but just from like their upbringing.
Sure. But before them, before, you know, 1983 or whenever they really hit the scene, was there even a team doing like the smaller guy, quick outsmart them, outmaneuver them type of tag team? Can we even like dial that back anywhere?
What was it? Okay, before when Dundee came over, I forget what the name of his partner was, but that was kind of their gimmick. They were the two smaller Australian guys, but they were fast in and out wrestle tag team. That was kind of their gimmick. But still, I don't know. I feel like that's why they did so well in Memphis, was because they came to the States. They went to Memphis where little guys could do that. So, I mean, maybe that's a somewhat of an evolution, maybe.
Interesting. Yeah, I know there was a Ricky Gibson in there, and Ricky Morton's father was a longtime Memphis referee. So wasn't necessarily a wrestler, but, you know, he was around it his entire life. We got into a lot there just talking about our preliminary thoughts. But
yeah.
Anywho. Are you ready for this championship and accomplishments section?
Bring it on. That's what I'm saying, man. Like, they've got plenty and they've got longevity on their side. I feel like you're unraveling it like a scroll.
You are, but man, I wish you looked it up also so you could help me explain some of this, because I know I'm going to do an okay job, but I know there's like, it's not the easiest to unravel.
I bet.
So they are 9-time NWA tag champs.
Yep, that sounds about right.
So 4 of them were in Mid-Atlantic or Jim Crockett Promotions. One of them was in WWE. The most recent one was 2019. And the others are sporadically throughout in other promotions.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. Things get a little wonky where you know, NWA and then WCW, and where do they split and where do they intersect? And but
and the NWA titles have been defended across multiple promotions throughout their history. So, you know.
Exactly. I think I say just keep listing them off, because I feel like it's not so much the complexity. I think it's more the absurdity in number is what we're looking at.
It's a little wacky. So there's nine NWA altogether. There is we touched on this title last week. They are two-time AWA Southern Tag Team Champs, which was the tag team titles recognized in Continental.
Yeah, I was going to say those were in Memphis, right? Yeah.
They are three-time Mid-South Wrestling Tag Team Champs, which Mid-South then became UWF, I believe.
Yep, and then got absorbed into the NWA.
They are two-time USWA Tag Champs.
Yep, Memphis.
And they are 10-time Smoky Mountain Tag Champs.
That's just crazy, because like Smoky Mountain wasn't around that long.
it's my favorite of them. I think I was watching, not to spoil who we watched, but during one of the Heavenly Bodies matches, I think they put over the Heavenly Bodies being like 6-time Smoky Mountain Tag Champs during that match. And I'm like, what? This match is from 93. How is this possible?
Yeah, they must have just been hot potatoing it, that those titles back and forth are around between a cavalcade of teams, I guess. I don't know, because like I said, Smoky Mountain wasn't around that long. And like, you know, it was Smoky Mountains. They were old school, so you think they revered titles and like title reigns were long, but there's no way they could have been.
Nope. 10-time Smoky Mountain Tag Team Champs. They were the 1986 PWI Tag Team of the Year.
Yep.
It's the only year they were the tag team of the year. I think they were like third runner up the next year, but that's it.
Really? See, I find that odd.
Yeah, no Observer tag team of the year. Just that one.
Wow, that's crazy. Well, then, I don't know. Maybe that's just their longevity thing. But no, I feel like they definitely were. They were walking on water in 85 and 86. And then, like, I don't know, I felt like they were still good even up into the early 90s. Once you get to the mid, you know, we'll discuss.
On the PWI Top 100 list, they are number 4.
See, that's what I'm saying. You'd think number 4, all the way, number 4, you would have had at least more than one time you were a team of the year. But I don't know, they were also in an era of really good teams. Let's put that over too.
Agreed. And on the Sports Illustrated top 50 list we referenced, they are also number 4.
See, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
The other statistic, they are in the Wrestling Observer, the NWA, and the WWE Hall of Fame.
You know, I mean, we could just end the podcast right here. You know what I mean? There you go. If you're in 3 Hall of Fame, I think we know that you're great.
Yeah. And they got all the hardware to prove it.
Yeah. I want to believe that they have like right? You would think maybe one of them's a little bit of a mark for themselves and has like, you'd think they'd have like a wrestle room, but like it would just be covered in stuff.
Yeah. Somewhere in Memphis, there should be like a rock and roll museum.
Yeah, there definitely should be. Well, if we ever get WWF puts one up, they definitely got to have like at least a little locker full of all their stuff.
A wing of that museum.
They could, but you know what I'm saying. You know what I mean? Like in the other Hall of Fame, usually they get like, everybody gets like a little, yeah, it looks like a locker usually.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. All right, Cheech. I'm looking at my list now. There's a lot of, like, who did you watch the Rock and Roll Express wrestle?
Okay, I'll put it this way. They had so many matches. For the first time, like, in searching, I had to parse it by region. Like, at first, I just looked up, like, all right, Rock and Roll Express versus, and then just in general. Then I was like, yikes. Then I was like, all right. So I literally had to be like, all right, Rock and Roll Express, Mid-Atlantic, then Mid-South, then WCW, NWA, WWF, so I was able to get into the first one I watched was them versus the Poffos, you could call them. It was Macho Man Randy Savage and Lanny Poffo in Memphis in 84. I watched a Gordy and Roberts from Mid-South in 85, DiBiase and Dr. Death from Mid-South in 85, the Dirty White Boys, Len Denton and Tony Anthony from Houston in 85, versus the Wild Samoans in WCW NWA 1990. This one I was happy I found. I tracked down Kawada versus and Fuyuki, which I think that was Footloose in All Japan in 88. That one was pretty fun to watch and eye-opening. Them versus the Rising Suns in Mid-Atlantic in 85 versus the Alamo Busters, who were Hector and Chavo Classic in Mid-South in 85. A Landell and Pat Rose in Mid-South. A Hercules and Dr. Death, both green, in 84 Mid-South. A Sheep Herders Crockett Cup in 86. A Candido and Primetime Lee in Smoky Mountain 94. A Harlem Heat in Nitro 96. A Stud Stable from Super Clash, that's AWA 3 in 88. A Heavenly Bodies from Survivor Series 93. Black Phantom and Ben Alexander, a squash match from Mid-Atlantic in 85. The Golden Terror and Ron Rossi, another squash from Mid-Atlantic in 85. Versus the Jeffers, Jim and Mac, from Mid-Atlantic 86. Jake Roberts and The Barbarian, who was John Nord, being just wacky, Mid-South 85. A Superdome show from Mid-South in 84 versus the Midnight Express. A Mid-South normal show in 84 versus Midnight Express. Another match with the Alamo Busters, which are the Guerreros, in 85, which was the follow-up to the match I watched earlier. And Arn Tully from WCW in 87. A Heavenly Bodies from Saturday Night in 93. And Arn and Benoit from Nitro in 96. And Arn and Flair from Nitro 96. A new Midnight Express from Unforgiven 98. Holy crap. And then I ended it with versus the Midnight Express Wrestle War 90, which is an all-time classic.
Ooh, that brother. Is
brother. It felt so good just to read that.
It's funny because, like, we touched on some of the same stuff, but plenty of this is going to be different.
I feel like I need a cigarette.
I wanted to start at the top and run through it chronologically, but it's not a task that I really could take on with the rock and roll. It's a little tougher to like nail down dates on all of these to get them absolutely in order. So I just tried my best.
I was going to say there's so many that there's no way you could go in order because it would require too much research.
Yeah, I started to and I was like, oh, screw this. I'm just going to go like, I'm just going to see how they look in this clip and be like, oh, that's probably older. Like, oh, does Robert have the Partridge Family hair? Yeah, that sounds like it's old enough. So I have them against Randy Mulkey and Gene Legion. Them against the Barbarian and TJ Khan. Them against the Rising Suns. Them against Thunderfoot and Black Bart. Them against Midnight Express in 84. Them against Arn and Tully. Them against Arn and Ole. Them against Arn and Flair. Them against Arn and Benoit.
Yes!
Them against... So I got them against every incarnation with Arn Anderson. I got them against every... Midnight Express. So I got there's a Condry, there's a Lane, and I definitely did hit one of the new Midnight Express with Bob and Bart. I also did both versions of the Heavenly Bodies. I got a Smoky Mountain Heavenly Bodies, and I got the Survivor Series 93 Heavenly Bodies. And I finished with them against Mark and Jay Briscoe from last year at Ring of Honor.
Bro, that's the thing. Like, part of me wanted to jump into some of the new stuff, but like I was just loving the old stuff too much that I was like, and here's the thing, like I had seen clips and stuff from the Briscoes matches and their recent stuff and their little spots they did in AEW and things like that. And it's, of course, it's cool. I mean, we love it, but I definitely wanted to get into like their golden age.
Yeah. Like, and in addition to that, I watched three different Rock and Roll Express music videos, one of which was like made for them in like 85, and it's just them leaning up on a car and putting money in a jukebox over and over again.
Yeah, bro, I saw a couple of those too. They were great.
I was like, I gotta watch them. I can't not watch them. I have to give it a shot.
But okay, all I could think in watching those vignettes and stuff, I was like, okay, wrestlers don't live this lavish. Like the one I watched, they were driving a Porsche. I was like, no offense, neither of these guys drive this Porsche. Whose Porsche is it?
No, yeah, the one was crazy, and like it shows a lot of like early on and just like them coming to the ring. Girls were full on like kissing him on the mouth on their way to the ring.
Oh, dude. Okay, here. I want to get into it now. RIP the Road Warriors, and you know, we've all been hearing the great stuff about them and the Road Warrior pop. I'm sorry that we need to make room in that conversation for the Rock and Roll Express pop in friggin' 1985 in Mid-South. It's absurd. Absurd.
Yeah. One of the first clips I watched, it didn't say who it was against, but it was just like Rock and Roll Express at their peak, and the clip starts and their music hits and that place loses its goddamn mind.
Yeah, I found it. Mid-Atlantic 85 in like the late summer, early fall, like the Black Phantom Ben Alexander match I watched. Literally, I just go, crowd is bonkers for rock and roll. And that was literally just at their music.
Yeah, first thing I wrote on the first match is crowd is rabid, !!
But you know what I mean? Like, I've seen all their stuff in WCW and like 90, 91, all that stuff, like Capital Combat, all those tag matches, all the late 80s stuff. And I was like, man, yeah, these guys are really over. It was like, no. You need to go see Mid-Atlantic 85 summer and fall. And you're like, oh, no, that's just a different level. Like, I get that the Road Warriors, it was more men, so it's probably the pop had more like bass in its voice, but the shrieks and just the overall just, oh my gosh, it was just crazy. I was like, holy crap, they know. Or like even some of them, they'd be like, next is a tag match, and the crowd will go crazy, like, all right, we're getting rock and roll.
Yeah, and like, so there was the them getting like kissed on the way to the ring, but then as you get a little later, and like people are still going crazy for them, but they are just like, almost look angry pushing their way to the ring because they're getting grabbed and pulled and like yanked on the whole people. Like women are physically grabbing their face and they're just trying to get to the ring.
Would you enjoy that on an entrance?
It was like, and then they'd get to the ring and they'd start like firing up. But on the way down, they're looking mad. They're like,
yeah,
stop pulling on me.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't like that. If I went to the crowd, they started doing that to me. Even if it was an adulation, part of me be like, no. Like, yeah, one of them, someone like grabs his arm and yeah, like Robert turns like, don't touch me. And I was just like, I've been there, brother.
It's like, and that's like the 86-ish, 87. So they've been dealing with that like every night for years at that point. So then you see people tugging on them and they just look like, just get me to the ring. Just somehow, please, Lord, get me to the ring.
Yeah, it was crazy. But, I mean, you know, obviously it showed that, you know, obviously what they were doing was working.
Okay, so the rock and roller great, yada, yada, yada. I wanted to bring this up. Do you think that their gimmick ceased to be cool before they really hit it, like before wrestling got mainstream enough for them to get like that real worldwide popularity? Do you think that's what it was?
Yeah, I just think whatever popular music just got too fractured, I think. You know what I mean? I feel like in 85, the coolest of the cool was rock and roll, and that was it. Suddenly you're in the 90s, and you're like, well, rock and roll's cool. This rap stuff's cool. Oh, so these chick bands are cool, you know what I mean? Like oh, grunge band, you know what I mean? Like, as things evolved, it evolved further. It schismed more. It broke apart. So it wasn't just like, oh, the cool music is this one thing. Now it's like cool music kept getting more diverse.
Yeah, because even by like the late 80s, it seemed like the gimmick was almost not cool anymore, and they were still great and people still loved them, but that wasn't cool anymore. They weren't any longer cool.
Yeah, eventually, yeah, around the late 80s, I'd say super late, probably 89, 90 and stuff. Yeah, their gimmick was more, they're a great tag team because they were a great tag. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like, oh, no, these are young, hip rock and roller guys. It's like, oh, no, this is a great tag team.
Do you think that they could have had more longevity pivoting into something different?
I don't know, because I'm a because yes, it is possible, but if it goes bad, like it goes, like everything goes away. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm on the fence. I'm on the fence about it as well. But I thought the same thing. I thought, like, the reason that, you know, everyone knows the Rock and Roll Express are a great tag team, but by the time wrestling was like hitting its boom period, their gimmick was already like played out and already seen, like already not seen as cool. So even though they were a great tag team, they were like, it just misses them.
Okay. The reason I say, because oddly I watched a clip of this today, was when the Freebirds, when they redid themselves, and they remember, I don't know if you remember, it was one of the it was some WCW pay-per-view, and they put on, they had like the ear headsets, and it was the I'm a free bird, so what's your excuse? They, you know, and now they're trying to be more like late 90s like rockers, and it just felt, it almost shined a light on how kind of antiquated they were. So I feel like you could either keep playing the hits, or if you switch it, it kind of like, oh, yeah, it just exposes more how out of touch you were. And then, you know what I mean? Yeah. The Freebirds were gone, boom, in an instant after that. You know what I mean? It was a couple of years, and they were gone. I feel like if they pivoted and it went bad, they're done in 2-3 years. But if they stay the course, they can wrestle for another 20 years.
20 years? They hit 20 years 20 years ago.
Well, I'm saying 20 years after it was played out. They could go another 20 years after it was played out.
They still hit that 10 years ago.
I know. But yeah, that's the thing. I could see, like, but I don't know. You think they'd look good if they tried to go turn into Alice Cooper or something? You know what I mean?
No, I don't know. I don't know. But like, even in the late 80s into the early 90s, Ricky Morton's mullet is not doing it for anybody.
No, that's true. And then a gripe I had, which was weird, when they were wrestling Arn and Flair and Arn and Benoit in 96 WCW, I'm like, wow, they look out. They look very antiquated. But when I watch them at Unforgiven 98, they don't seem as bad. Maybe it's because they're wrestling the New Midnight Express and the whole presentation, but I don't know. Something about that WCW Nitro in like 96 just seemed real, like, of the, I don't know, seemed kind of cutting edge. And then to see them out there, it was the frills. When they went to that fringe tassels down the side leg gimmick, they looked older in 96 than they did in 86. Like, if they would have went back to their gear from 86, I feel like they wouldn't have looked so out of touch.
Yes, it just felt like, just with what they had going on, that even in like, yeah, even in that run in like 93, when they were on Survivor Series in 93, it seemed like they were the old guys. But when you think about it, that's a tag team who's been on the scene for a decade. That's 10 years. That's not a crazy long amount of time. But at that point, like, that already seemed like, oh, the Rock and Roll Express, they're dusting these guys off in 93.
Well, once again, that's just the problem of they've been on top so long. Like, you know what I mean? It's not really their fault that, oh, they didn't have a slow come up. They kind of hit and, you know, had the rocket ship attached to them pretty quickly.
By the way, I watched Arn and Flair from 1990 on like a Saturday night.
Oh, okay. I watched the Nitro one. And it was weird. When they were in there, obviously because Benoit's the younger guy. When they were in there with Benoit, they seemed really like, oh, they're wrestling old guys. When they were there with Flair and Arn, obviously they worked better. So it didn't seem so bad. But it just seemed odd that, like, in 96, I was like, boy, these guys are old. But I watched them in WWF E in 98, I was like, okay, this ain't so bad. That doesn't seem so weird.
I watched a random match with them against the New Midnight Express, and they had them come out to the Rockers theme. Did they do that in this match too?
Okay, I just thought that was the dubbing on the network.
No.
Oh, crap, that's so weird. Because even I wrote that down. I go, wow, it's weird. They came out to the Rockers music.
Yeah, it was the first. I watched it on YouTube, and I was like, did they really make the Rock and Roll Express use the Rockers theme song? Yuck.
Okay, see, that's the thing. I watched it on the network, so I was already desensitized to them just ruining their entrances with wacky music. So I was just like, oh, that's a weird choice. Okay. But they played it live, and that's weird because, like, I don't know. I feel like it's somewhat of iconic music. I feel like you hear that if you're a wrestling fan, at least from the Rockers' age. And if you knew who the Rock and Roll Express were, you knew who the Rockers were. So, yeah, them coming out to that music, yeah, that's really weird.
It's weird because that's 98, but in 93, when they were wrestling the Heavenly Bodies on Survivor Series, they had, like, some generic rock theme. It was not the Rockers' music.
Yeah, that's weird. But can we take a second to talk about the Heavenly Bodies? Because you know I'm a huge Stan Lane fan, but I also love Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey. And I'm just saying, both pairings worked great with either. Like, the Survivor Series match was awesome. Then I saw a match on Saturday night where I think it was Heavenly Bodies, but now it was Stan Lane, in Smoky Mountain, but for some reason WCW was going to let them have a match with the Rock and Roll on Saturday night. But it was like in a promo, so they're like in gym clothes, and they're like, oh, you want to do it now? Let's do it now. So they go into the ring, and they're wrestling in Zubazes and like jogging pants, which oddly makes them even look like smaller, skinnier guys. But it is a fiery back and forth, and I don't know, just the fact that they're in street clothes, like the crowd's going crazy. But like both pairings, oh, it was so good. It was so good.
So I listened to a quick clip of Jim Cornette talking about the Heavenly Bodies Rock and Roll stuff, because I thought for the 93 match at Survivor Series, the crowd could give a shit. And I was like, this is so weird. And then they mentioned it's in the Boston Garden. And I was like, oh, duh, 1993. I bet you no one in the Boston Garden even knew who these teams were. What a strange choice of location.
No, I know. And I thought about that too. Like, I remember I'll find one of the, I think it was Raw that they had. It was okay. The Unforgiven match at 98 is unannounced. Like, I remember as soon as I turned on, they're like, oh yeah, folks, I think we are going to have another extra match. And Cornette comes to the ring and cuts a promo about how they're going to have I think it's another Smoky Mountain match or something. But like in my head, I was like, wow, that's weird. It's cold. Like, they didn't advertise it, and it's the Rock and Roll Express out of nowhere, but it was in Greensboro, North Carolina. So I go, okay, I can understand. But yeah, to bring them up to Boston out of nowhere, yeah. Plus, I don't know, I felt like that whole traditional NWA Smoky Mountain Invasion thing in WWF at the time was weird, right? You remember it. It was weird.
So I listened to a Cornette clip, and Cornette is talking about it because when he was doing stuff with Smoky Mountain, they had a working relationship with WCW at first, which is where the Heavenly Bodies Rock and Roll thing first comes up. By the way, there is a match on YouTube, and I really wanted to watch it, but I didn't. I probably will later. It's the Heavenly Bodies, Steve Austin and Brian Pillman, against the Rock and Roll Express, Ricky Steamboat and Shane Douglas in an 8-man tag.
Yep. I've seen it.
Ooh, that sounds spicy. But anyways, so Watts leaves WCW and they end the relationship with Smoky Mountain. And months later, Bruce Pritchard gets a hold of Cornette and they start a working relationship. So they defended the Smoky Mountain titles on a WCW pay-per-view and a WWF pay-per-view in the same year.
Yeah, no. As I was watching it, I was like, it was so weird. Because it was also weird because it was different Heavenly Bodies. But yeah, like in the same year, it was two different Heavenly Bodies were on both Nitro, or I think it was a Saturday night, and a Raw, and defending belts and stuff. Yeah, it was real wacky.
Yeah, we can Heavenly, you know my feeling on the Heavenly Bodies. I don't want to get too much into the Heavenly Bodies because we'll definitely cover them on an episode. But Dr. Tom Pritchard, very Bobby Eaton like.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure I probably bit off him. I think Bobby came first.
Yeah, Dr. Tom, the Heavenly Bodies match I watched was almost, they were like spot for spot doing midnight spots with just Dr. Tom instead of Eaton.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, well, because, you know, I mean, when Stan Lane's in there, you know, gold just happens, okay? It just happens.
Okay, and not for nothing, but now I watch two Condry Eaton against Rock and Roll Express matches. Now I feel like we got to do an episode about Condry and Eaton because Condry rules.
Oh, I know. He does. He does. He does. He does. I know. But, well, same way. Like, I would be torn with either Heavenly Body teams, too. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, but like, oh, what was the one? Okay, the Midnight Express versus Rock and Roll from Wrestle War 90, I feel like was the culmination of that feud because, gosh, it went almost a half hour. They do like the first like 5 to 10 minutes is just almost gaga. Like, I appreciate when like they would get Cornette involved and he would do the whole thing where he pokes the ref and the ref pokes him and then they're going to have a match and then the ref gets up on him and blah, 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 blah. But like, and I was like, oh, okay. And they'll probably just go to the finish. And I was like, oh, no, no. Then the match kicks in. Like, we've already had 10 minutes of whatever. Now the real stuff happens and they put a hell of a heat on Ricky and then just beat him and beat him and beat him. And it's a great match because it's action packed and back and forth. But it does expose a negative that came about from all this watching. But I'll finish off by saying that match was awesome. But I do want to address a negative.
Okay.
And I just think it's just a victim of the times. Like, I watched a bajillion matches. By match number 5, I was like, okay, this whole behind the ref's back thing's getting real annoying. And sure enough, like... Like, and then like, I understood if you were, there weren't, you know, super duper smart marks in 85 and 86, but still part of me is like, wait a minute. When they do the double drop kick in big matches, the ref always gets Ricky out right away and is stuck with him for 5 minutes. But if it's a squash match on TV, they'll do the double drop kick and he'll let Ricky run around and dance and do everything he wants while he counts the 1, 2, 3. But oh no, if it's a big match versus bad guys, oh no, that double drop kick's illegal. Mr. Ricky, you get back on that apron, sir. You get back over there. Why aren't you going back over there? Oh, is there stuff going on behind my back? No, there can't be. I'm the referee. Yeah, it started to get a little...
Yeah, it's not like remember when we did the Hart Foundation and the Hart Foundation almost used the referee behind the back as like part of the shtick and it was built in and it would work for a reason or not work for a reason. It just felt like there was no rhyme or reason for why the ref would or would not turn around and what he did or did not see or when he was or wasn't pulled away.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, okay, because when I was watching early, I was like, oh, okay, they're always behind the ref's back. Like, it was always the thing. But then as I started watching some of the squash matches on TV, I go, wait, the ref suddenly doesn't give a shit about you guys being in there right now for the double dropkick. I was like, isn't that weird? I go, I guess if you just go over 5 minutes, then the ref cares. But if the match is under 5 minutes, anything goes, I guess.
So just because we just watched the Rockers, I also noticed that in just like the Rockers, they had, you know, if they were in those job matches, they were just playing the hits and getting out of there with a sunset flip. But if they had big matches, they had big match stuff. And they had like, you know, the matches stepped up that level too, just like we were talking about with the Rockers.
Yes, of course. One of my big things, of course, on all these podcasts, as you listen to every episode, I want to make sure that not only is this team great, but like, they also have like big match stuff. They have little match stuff. They've got bigger spots for the when the bright lights are on. And they certainly did. Now, one drawback a little bit was that we went from the most modern and went backwards. So part of me as I'm watching, I'm like, oh, okay, okay. But then like at one point it was him and Bobby and he does the, well, I call it the cactus crossbody to the outside. But, you know, like the cactus clothesline, but he does the crossbody and they both tumble to the floor. That's ballsy. Yeah. For 2020. And I'm like, they're doing this in 1990. Like, I had to remind myself that, oh no, Rock and Roll Express were very much cutting edge tag team. But, you know, when you look at it from a lens of now, you're like, oh, what was so cutting edge? You're like, no, all those spots or the Ricky Rana, as I would always call it, like, that was unheard of in Memphis or Mid-Atlantic or Mid-South at those times. Like, they were a cutting-edge tag team.
They were. And I think another thing that kind of sets them apart from the Rockers to me, the Rockers, everything looks so effortless. And I think there really is something to be said for when things look like you really have to work to do them. And it looked like the Rock and Roll, it didn't look effortless for them. It looked like they were putting in work with everything they did. Like, everything was, you know, like, nothing was like perfectly smooth. And that was cool. I like it more. I think it's almost, you know, edges on heel when things are like too easy for the babyface.
Nope, I agree. And like we had mentioned with the Rockers, I feel like the Rockers were the evolution, because the Rockers could go the different speeds. Like, they had a first and a second gear. The Rock and Roll Express did not have a first and second gear. They only had one gear. They would, like, if you would let them, they would go 100 miles per hour the entire match. Like, they don't slow down, they get slowed down. You know what I mean? Like, they're always going at 100 RPMs, but, like, it's on the heels to slow them down.
Wait, are we talking about the Rock and Roll RPMs? Because we can talk about the Rock and Roll RPMs.
Well, you know what I'm saying? Like, I realized that at one point I go, oh, wait, no. They're always, and I go, I guess it works with the gimmick, you know, they're young, hungry baby faces, you know, they're pedal to the metal. But, like, yeah, if you let them, they'll literally do hip toss, arm drag, noggin knockers, body slam, hip toss, arm drag, noggin knocker, body slam, all day, drop kicks all day, if you let them. But if you're a good team, you'll cut them off and you'll beat the crap out of them for 10, 20 minutes, you know what I mean? But once they get an opening, boom, right back to it, going Rev and Max, four guys in there, double sends, corner to corner, all that stuff.
All right, here's my hot take for the Rock and Roll Express. You ready?
Go for it.
Robert's better than Ricky.
I'm not arguing. I'm not arguing. Yeah, because when
and I don't, dive,
he's a little more. He's a little more nuanced.
Yeah, and I don't even think it's close. I think his dropkick is better. His punches are better. His general strikes are better. He's a bigger body, so it looks cooler when he's doing cool things. His fire and his sell are just as good, if not better, than Ricky's. It's like, hold on a second. Why have we been championing Ricky Morton all these years and kind of dogging Robert Gibson? Robert Gibson is the better member of this team.
He wasn't as pretty as Ricky.
So that's what I was thinking. I was like, does this really come down to the fact that Ricky had, like, the blonde mullet and was the pretty one? Is that really why we champion him?
Yeah, I think so. And plus, well, I was going to say one of their strong suits is, and one of their main things that they gave to wrestling was the, like, they had a tag team dynamic. You knew Ricky was going to get beat up, and you knew Robert was going to come in and clear house. You know what I mean? So I feel
but
like
why didn't we like Robert more? Because Robert was the guy doing the stuff. He was the clearing house guy. He was the offense guy. You would think that we would like Robert.
Brother, okay, listen, you're talking to the guy who's been the hot tag on both of the teams he's teamed on. So I've learned it's easier for the crowd to connect to a guy who's selling, because they're showing more emotion.
Man, Robert has a good sell, though, too. There were some matches where Robert took the heat, and he takes a good heat.
Oh, no, it's true. But once again, the narrative on that team always has been they're going to beat up on Ricky, and Robert's going to stand there. But, yeah, no, Robert was awesome. And even when he did take heat, he was awesome. And I even found him to be better at, like, working a hold and being a little bit more of a technician than Ricky. But once again, Ricky was just a little more, had a, you know, a wilder air to him. You know what I mean? Like, he seemed a little more crazier. And he had more of that crazy look in his eye. And Robert's eyes, unfortunately, we wouldn't categorize them as crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Man, and I don't know. Like, we just watched the Rockers. And there is a distinct line between Sean and Marty that has been discussed for years, and everyone knows it, and everyone knows that it's Sean, and then it's Marty. But with Ricky and Robert, I feel like there's that same thought behind it, that Ricky was the Sean, and Robert was the Marty. But I not agree with that at all in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I just think, once again, it was just that was the story of the team, though. It was like, oh, you're going to beat up Ricky and the girls are going to go crazy. And they're, you know what I mean? Like, he was a little more pretty boyish, I guess. You know what I mean? It's, yeah, I think that's weird. Same thing with Sean. Sean was a little more pretty boy than Marty. It's the blonde. They don't like brunettes.
I think, and I think if Robert kept the Partridge Family hair and didn't try to copy Ricky with the mullet, I think we're talking a whole different story with Robert Gibson. I think that Partridge Family hair would have made it.
It was good. I do think it was better. But yeah, no, I don't know. I just think, once again, it was just, you know what I mean? That was the makeup of the team. It was, you know what I mean? You knew one was going to get beat up and he was a little more fiery. I don't know. But yeah, I don't disagree.
Wow.
I do not disagree.
Wow. As I kept getting farther and farther, it went from like, oh, Robert looked really good here, to, man, I don't think Robert gets enough love, to, I think Robert's the better member of the team. It literally, you can watch my notes escalate.
But it might also be another thing where it's just, since we are deep diving, maybe Ricky just gets a little overexposed because he's in there more. You know what I mean?
Even in like, in current day, with the Briscoes match, Ricky's doing wacky stuff, which I do appreciate, but Robert looks way better. Like, Ricky's kind of hunched now. Robert's still like standing tall and looking pretty good. Like,
he's just had to stand on the apron. All he had to do was stand on the apron for the last 40 years or so, they say. He definitely did more than that. But you know what I mean? That's the story. Yeah. I mean, I think Ricky always said, he's like, oh, you could have put Robert's 8x10 in the corner. It would have been the same.
I disagree wholeheartedly.
I don't like the narrative. I agree. We got to reshape that. Robert also carried his end, if not more. He just wasn't selfish like Rick.
Yeah. That might literally be it.
Yeah, it could be.
I had to get that out. I was like, man. We really walk around acting like Ricky Morton was the better of the Rock and Roll Express. We walk around like that as a society, and it's wrong.
I agree. I also think as a society, we should also give more love to the Golden Terror. I don't know if you caught any matches of his. He had good bumps. He had great gear. In the match he was in, he did all the work and literally tagged his partner in just to take the double drop kick. And I was like, boy, that partner must have been horrible.
Who did he be? Did he do anything else? Did you look?
No, I didn't look up. There's another match with him, but I didn't. Where like this match had the Golden Terror and Ron Ross. He was only like 3 minutes. I was like, all right, Golden Terror. I always like the weird mask guys, so I watched that and I was like, okay. And then there was another one that was like 8 minutes, and I was like, ooh, I do want to get back to that. I go, I don't know if I should waste time on the jobber matches, but yeah, I don't know who the Golden Terror was, but he deserved better. That was literally in my notes. Golden Terror deserved better.
like I watched Thunderfoot and Black Bart, and Thunderfoot's one of those guys. He's just a guy in a mask and a full body suit. No idea who he is. Didn't bother looking it up. He looked okay. Randy Mulkey, though, of the Mulkey Brothers. Woo! Bumps and sells like an animal.
Well, yeah, they were a good enhancement team for a reason.
His partner came in off the beginning of the match. His partner just like took one of the shine moves and then took another and then tagged out and never got back in. Randy Mulkey did the rest of the work.
I did want to draw attention to the Rock and Roll Express versus Arn and Tully. No disqualification, WCW, September 19th, 1987. I want to draw attention to the no disqualification. Did you happen to watch this match?
Okay, so I was just going to say, I also watched this match, and I noted it and enjoyed.
Okay, match was great. But the finish, once again, it was a no DQ match. They knocked the ref down. They hit him with a foreign object. 1, 2, 3, which it's like, why did you need to bump the ref and do it behind his back? If it's no disqualification, you could have done it right in front of the ref. But whatever. 1, 2, 3. Another ref comes down. Earl Hebner in WCW. It was weird. He's like, no, no, no. He used the weapon, which, once again, what does it matter? It's no DQ. They restart the match. I go, oh, snap. They're doing dusty finish? okay, now all of a sudden I'm perked up because I was like, you're really going to do me dirty like that? You're gonna make me watch 28 minutes of a match and give me that finish? So they restart the match. They brawl into the aisle for a double countout. Once again, in a match that's no DQ. What the hell, WCW?
So, yes, yes, it had its flaws. But I like the idea that just because it's no disqualification does not mean that there are no rules and that it's just a free-for-all melee. There are still rules, and the referee will still enforce the rules. You just can't get disqualified.
It was ridiculous. Some of the finishes on some of these matches, like the first match with the Guerreros is awesome, but somehow there's two referees, because that's right, the Guerreros were like, we want one American referee and one Mexican referee, but they couldn't, so they got two American referees, and that was part of their dispute and blah, blah, blah. But they have two referees, and then the match still ended in like a double DQ. I was like, what's the point of having all these referees if you're still not going to get a finish?
So, yeah, back to the Arn and Tully one, though. While that the idea of it was a little bit flawed because it goes a little bit too crazy, there's ways to keep that thing inside the lines that they've drawn of you just can't get disqualified, but there are still rules that I really enjoy.
Oh, yeah, no, I really love the fact that, okay, it's no DQ, and then things start getting feisty, and then Ricky's the first one to bring a chair in, but nothing happens. He's like, all right, fine, I'm just gonna get rid of the chair. But then, like, 2 seconds later, he throws Tully over the top, which is also would be a DQ, but now it's not. I was like, oh, they teased it and then paid it off with something not as big. Oh, it was so good. The work was great. That was another thing. I'll get to it and why they're great, but like, they're real good, all the gimmick matches and stuff. Like, they always put over all those things. Those are always enjoyable.
And just because Ricky came in with the chair didn't mean that Tommy Young was just going to be like, go ahead, hit him with a chair. He's still the referee. He's still trying to keep order and enforce this stuff. He just wouldn't be able to disqualify him if he hit him. He's still not going to want him to hit him, and he's still going to try not to let him hit him. But he's not going to disqualify, but he is going to try to enforce the rules.
Yep, and then Arn keeps choking him with the tag rope, but, you know, making sure to turn away from the ref. And I was like, it's no DQ.
But the ref would take the thing. He's not going to DQ him, but he would take it away because he's enforcing
it's
the rules.
It's true. I understand. It's fine.
It's wacky, though. Oh, by the way, remember how last week we were talking about Rocker's Orient Express and how the match is so great, but it's got such a blah finish?
Yeah.
That's the finish the Rock and Roll do with the Rising Sun.
Oh, I enjoyed the Rising Suns too. They were odd, but I enjoyed them as well. Yeah, no, dude, you think all those finishes were passed around.
In a 6-minute tag match with the Rising Sun, that finish is perfectly acceptable. In a 20-minute like banger with double dives on pay-per-view, no, that finish is not so good.
No, I know. That also brought another thing that kind of drove me nuts a little bit or Ricky and Robert were both guilty of it. You give them it's a 10-minute heat, beating the crap out of Ricky, and then Robert's going to come in, and he's going to have a hot tag for 10 seconds. And then Ricky's going to come back, and
Sunset flip, let's get out of here.
Yeah, that was the thing. It always just felt weird. It felt disproportionate to be like, all right, the meat of the match is going to be 98% of it. The other 2% is 1% at the beginning and 1% at the end. I'm like, huh? Like, yeah, the heats were all enjoyable, and, you know, Ricky's great at getting beat up and being, you know, the good guy in peril. But, like, I don't know, I felt like, Robert, you've been waiting forever to get in there. You could go a little bit more than a minute.
Well, it was different, and it wasn't a 1% at the front, 1% at the back. It was sometimes, a lot of times with the Rock and Roll, it was like a good, like, 25% in the front, and then 70% in the heat, and then 5% on the back end. You know, if they just stretched out the back end and shortened up the middle, it's a perfectly proportioned
match. No, and then there were matches where they definitely did a lot of stuff in the ending, and I was like, oh, okay, this is more what I'm talking about. But it would always just be so weird. It almost felt abrupt sometimes, where it was like, okay, they're just letting you marinate, and finally, bing, bang, boop, it's over. You're like, what? All right. But, like, the crowd loved it because, I don't know, that was just the way it was in the 80s. It was all about getting to the hot tag. It's not necessarily what happened after the hot tag. It was all about getting to the hot tag.
Well, also, in I mean, especially in that time, like what you wanted to get was that big pop, and the big pop was going to be the hot tag. So why are you going to mess around with it too much? You've already got the crowd all the way up.
I know, but I just appreciated it more. Like the two matches with the Guerreros always just seemed like they were doing a little bit more. They put a little more at the end. And that was just on like TV stuff. But I guess maybe that was just young when they were in Mid-South. But, you know, it just felt like, well, okay, one of the notes I put was that it's funny that, like, us, a modern-day team on the indies, like, every match is almost precious. Like, I wish sometimes we could, you know, just have a match where we throw it away with a stupid double countout. But, we, you know what I mean? We don't have that luxury. They, on the other hand, are wrestling 87 times a week. So, like, that was almost just the normal thing. It was almost odd when they'd be like, oh, wait, okay, this let's put a crazy ending to it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It just feels like – It's almost the reverse. Like, I wish we had more matches that we could do throwaway endings, and I bet you they wish they had, like, bigger matches where they could go with bonker endings, but it was just like, oh, no, every match is just another. Let's get to the next show. Let's get to the next show. So that's why it was a lot of these wacky finishes, and then eventually at Starrcade, then they'll get a finish. You know what I mean?
Well, correct, and that's just the old business model of pro wrestling, that these TVs and these smaller shows were just to build to the big show, which you wanted to fill the seats, and you wanted to get buys on a pay-per-view or whatever it was, and so you wanted those to feel special. You knew that Ricky and Robert were going to go out there and do the crazy thing. You just saw them do it. They came to your town, and it was a 6-minute match with a sunset flip, but I watch them on Starrcade, and here we go. They're going to go.
No, I know. It was enjoyable. But, you know, I mean, like I said, it just got weird with the – there was always, oh, something happens behind the ref's back, and he gets hit with an object, 1, 2, 3. Or the ref does sit, DQ. You know what I mean? It just seemed like a lot of throwaway finishes.
Or sunset flip or crossbody. They love to do the barely leave your feet crossbody.
Well, that was also my other thing. That's why I was like, okay, I got to watch some of the squash matches and the TVs, A, just to see what it was like when, you know, like the crowd reacts differently for an enhancement match, knowing like, oh, okay, they're going to bring the goods. This is going to be quick, bing, bang, boom, as opposed to like, oh, okay, wait, no, they're facing, you know, Arn and Tully. This match is going to be 20 minutes. You know what I mean? It's a different type of excitement. So it's fun watching those quick squashes, and it was fun to finally see them win with the double dropkick. You know what I mean? So many times I feel like we watch all these, and we're like, they never really hit their finish. So I was like, oh, no, I'm going to make sure and watch some of these short matches. They're definitely going to be hitting some double dropkicks. But even then, they do some other wacky ones in there too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. I'm not even sure this next portion of the podcast needs to be discussed. It's a well-documented – they're in three Hall of Fame, for God's sake.
Exactly.
But what made the Rock and Roll Express so
– Exactly. Great? Here's where we get to distill it right into its essence. And I go, they were fast, they were crisp, they were of the times, and, like, they set – once again, like I said earlier, if you're a team that's so good that what you do becomes a template for other teams, you're obviously great. And I'm not even necessarily talking about like what we've deep dived into of being the young hip team. I'm talking about like they set the standard for like, oh, you know, one guy is the one who gets beat up and one guy is the one who comes and clears house. But boy, when they're together, that's when the greatness happens. You know what I mean? Like, the fact that they were able to establish that and then other teams would go by that formula, you're great. Then the fact that they touched the generation by being like the first really young, cool, hip rock and roll tag team, that's a whole nother reason why they're great. Once again, they set the standard there. Once again, what did the Rockers do? They touched a generation of 8, 9, 10-year-old kids playing with toys. What did the Hardy Boys do? They hit it off with all the 13, 14, 15-year-old kids who were pissed off at the mall. Who did the Young Bucks hit off with? All these man children who miss the days and love all the cool spots. You know what I mean? Like, Rock and Roll were the first one who were like, oh, no, we've got a sect of this country that we're just going to touch, and they're going to be ours, and they're going to go nuts for us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they really did, like, create the way tag team wrestling is done. They changed the way things were done I don't know about change, but, you know, molded it into what it is, what it became, and pretty much what it still currently is. is because of the Rock and Roll Express. And not for nothing, not just tag team wrestling, but a little bit of this like quick current shine 'em up arm drag head scissors style that people grew to love. The Rock and Roll Express were doing that stuff in 85, 86, and then into the early 90s, like they were throwing suicide dives and stuff that people weren't doing back in, you know, the 80s and early 90s. They were the what everything is molded off of. Everything is, you know, it all comes back to the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah, when you're the template for what great teams go to be and want to be, that makes you great. You know what I mean? Like you said, they're the template.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. It wasn't coming to me, but template's the word.
You look at them and you're like, oh, you know what I mean? Even still to this day, they're, come on, they just had I wouldn't say a run, but you know what I mean? AEW, the hottest thing in wrestling right now, they made sure that they paid respect. Because what do they have going right now? A bunch of tag teams that'll go that one. Well, yeah, they have different speeds. But if left to their devices, they're going to be like Ricky and Robert and go pedal the metal the whole time. You just got to slow them down. So, like, the fact that we're, what, 30, 40 years now and teams are still trying to do what they're doing or doing what they were doing by going balls to the wall, come on. It speaks for itself. And the fact, you know what I mean? Like, they're still in the zeitgeist of tag team wrestling. They wrestled the Briscoes last year in Ring of Honor. Come on.
Yeah, I watched them wrestle the Briscoes in what I would consider a fun tag team match. Like, not good for Ricky and Robert getting in there and doing it. There are plenty of tag teams on the independent scene who couldn't hang with the Briscoes like Ricky and Robert hung with the Briscoes, and they're in their 60s.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, we could even... We've kind of talked about it in just by going through their roster of who they've wrestled, but like their longevity, we could just talk about their greatness just based solely on that. Look at all the teams they've wrestled. If you go down their list, it's probably almost as varied as the Hardy Boys. And remember how big we were putting that over? Come on.
Agreed. And what they do is timeless. There's like, until one of them completely breaks down, they can still do it. Which is crazy impressive because it's not like they just did punch, kick, choke, man. They do slip, slam, tackle, drop down, grab the head again, send off, tackle, over the back, drop kick, head scissors. And you're like, what? That dude is 63.
Yeah, no, they never, once again, another sign of a great team. They always change with the times. Like you said, by the time, I forget which one it was. Yeah, no, I think it was on the Survivor Series. Robert's holding the ropes open so that Ricky can do a suicide dive. And that was big in 93. Like, you got to remember, it's of the times how crazy these things were.
Yeah. So, that being said, and this question I don't think is as difficult as nailing down what made them great, which is basically just saying that they're great and incredible and unbelievable. But I don't feel like the Rock and Roll Express are undefeatable.
Not at all.
How would we defeat them?
I got it. Like I was saying, my gripe earlier was that they, you know what I mean? Their best part of the match is in the first two thirds. They can't, their go home ain't our go home. You know what I mean? They can wrestle at 100 miles per hour when they're just taking middle of the road moves. Let's see how balls to the wall they can go when they're taking big moves. You know what I mean? Like, most of the time, it's they get beat up, but, you know, punch, kick, stomp, choke. What happens when they got to take a Lincoln Log? What happens when they got to take a Doom and Gloom? What happens when they got to take a Bomba Bomb? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like we would only be able to beat them if we took them into deep waters and into big moves that they have no idea about.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We got to get out of the shine quickly. We can't let them roll on us in the beginning for very long, because that's where they do most of their damage. They do it in the beginning when they're bit bopping you around with head scissors and arm drags and knee lifts and slams and all that stuff. We can't get lured into too much of that, and we can't get lured in general into taking 17 hip tosses in a row. So I think if we can avoid the early onslaught from the Rock and Roll Express, then we just get them on the back end.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem. Once again, they're going 100 miles per hour. And of course, they're most successful at the beginning because everyone's fresh. We just got to try and get to that first burst of offense and maybe even the second burst of offense. But we got to try and wear them down with our big offense because they ain't used to that.
Listen, Cheech, if one of them gives me a hip toss, I want you to just stay on the apron. Don't get lured in into taking a second hip toss, because then you know I'm going to take a third hip toss, and then you're going to take a fourth hip toss.
No, I would get in the ring only to tackle you from not taking any more hip tosses.
Okay, smart. Or hip toss me to our own corner in a Ricky and Robert special.
It could happen.
All right, well, that went actually shorter than I thought it would, because I was like, oh, man, we're going to talk about the Rock and Roll Express forever. But just over an hour, so.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, once again, let the longevity speaks for itself. So, yeah, they can get a little extra time.
Yeah, wait till we talk about the Legion of Doom. They're, like, the number one team on every list, so we're just going to have to, like, it's going to be a marathon. We're just going to talk about every match in depth.
All of them.
Just to pay proper respect.
Wait till we get to the section about Rocco, their mentor. That's going to be at least an hour.
All right. Well, at risk of just dragging this thing out any longer, whammalama, bamalama, rock and roll never dies, and we'll see you next week.
Adios.